The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. You know, I was listening to that disclosure, and I'm thinking to myself, who actually had the time to write that thing? So anyway, someone did, and they made me say it. So hopefully you enjoyed that, what could be, by the end of my career, a 30-minute disclosure to start the show. We're going to have a good one today. Charles Sizemore, he is the Chief Investment Officer of Sizemore Capital Management. He's out of Texas. He's going to be on, a frequent guest on CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox Business News. He's been a guest on our show a few times in the past. I call him the James Earl Jones of investment managers, not because James Earl Jones has anything to do with investments, but when you hear Charles's voice, you'll know exactly what I mean. All right, let's do a little news of the week. This week brought to you by Indiana Dave, buying or selling. Dave wants to discuss your needs. Indiana Dave Real Estate, easy to Google and easy to Yelp. His last name's not overly easy to say. Well, did you see this? The controversial bill to replace Obamacare actually passed on Thursday afternoon. The Republicans barely got it through, just 52 votes. That means they can only lose two senators and still push the repeal through. So there's still a lot of work to do there. Also, you know, we talk about demographics a lot here on the show, but the aging population, by the year 2030, now that sounds like a long time from now, right? That's only 13 years from now. The U.S. could be facing a very big shortage of medical doctors. They claim 104,000 plus comes from the Association of American Medical Colleges, and that includes 43,000 primary care physicians. So, you know, I know a lot of docs, and they're not always loving medicine right now. Love dealing with the patients, but not with all the other stuff. We talked about this many times before. The magic of compound interest, some call it the eighth wonder of the world. $1 growing at 8% on a tax-deferred basis would grow to over 10 bucks in 30 years. Now, what if you just earned 4%? It would take 30 years to just get over $3, or basically, you're going to earn three times more with just double the return over 30 years. That is the value of compounding interest. And then finally, their favorite investment, 34% of Americans say that real estate is their best long-term investment. And only 26% say stocks is their long-term choice. This comes from Gallup. But, you know, I was asking someone the other day about this, and they said, oh, real estate's the best investment. And then I said, well, let's say you paid $100,000 for a house today, and it was worth $200,000. You doubled your money in 20 years. Would that be a good investment? And they said, yeah, that would be fantastic. And I said, well, did you know that if you use the rule of 72, that means that a 3.6% annual compounded rate of return is what you would need to have to double your money in 20 years? And they go, 3.6? That's not very good. I said, that's my point. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined live on the telephone by Mr. Charles Sizemore himself. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for being with us. On the phone with me now is Mr. Charles Sizemore. He is the Chief Investment Officer of Sizemore Capital LLC down in Texas, the great state of Texas. Some tell me that if Texas wasn't part of our union, the United States would have been in a recession for the last 20 years. So thank you, Texas. Charles is a frequent guest on CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox Business News. He's been a contributor to the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Forbes, and many others. He has a master's degree from the London School of Economics and has been a guest on the show before as well. He and his wife, Maria, they have two boys, Charles and Ian, and they actually enjoy traveling to the country of Peru. And believe it or not, folks, Charles is on the phone with us right now, calling us from Peru. Hey, Charles, how are you?
Very good. Let me just start by saying I accept your thanks on behalf of the state of Texas for keeping America out of recession for the past 20 years.
Someone said that one time at a conference, and I believed it. You know how it is, Charles. If you say something quickly with confidence, people tend to believe you. So anyway, that's how it goes. Hey, you are down.
Words to live by.
The words to live by. You are down in Peru. How's the weather down there?
You know, it's great. It's actually the summer has finally ended here, and it's kind of turning into fall. So it's kind of a little bit of a bite in the air, and it's not bad.
Yeah, it's better than here in Indiana. It's been raining, I think, for 40 days and 40 nights, counting tomorrow night. So we'll see how it goes. All right.
Did you build your ark?
Yeah, well, we're about halfway done right now. We need one bad. Charles, this has been an interesting time since the election. You know, I remember back sitting with people in my office and talking about what happens if this happens and that happens. And the bottom line is no one ever really knows what's going to happen. But I remember saying to people, well, you know, even here on the show, well, if Hillary wins, it's likely that things will kind of stay the status quo. You know, if Donald wins, then, you know, I can see a kind of a sell-off as people kind of figure out the uncertainty and then maybe it'll catch some footing. But, you know, I think since the election, obviously, this thing's been on a tear. But the first quarter, GDP came out a little lower than expected. The Fed was meeting and said, you know what, we think the second quarter will be just fine. We're going to stay on track of raising rates. It just seems like right now that the market's doing this. We see the bond market that has pulled back. You're seeing rates of the 10-year really low in the 2.2-2.3 range, which would indicate not a lot of growth, not a lot of inflation. But then on the other hand, you have the market that seems to be saying something totally different. I just think we're in a really strange environment right now. Can you help clear this up a little bit for us?
Yeah, I'm right there with you, actually. It is interesting. I know, you know, thinking back to the election, my thinking going into it, now I'm one of the few people that actually on the record, in writing, you can find stuff I wrote beforehand. I actually predicted Trump would win, but I didn't expect things to unfold the way they did. What I expected was, you know, Trump would win. You would have some market turmoil there at the beginning because no one knew quite what to expect. And then, you know, 2 or 3 months into it, people would figure out, okay, I mean, things really haven't changed that much. I mean, there's going to be some changes, but no big deal. And we'd be back to, you know, pre-election highs within, you know, 3 or 4 months. Well, it all happened in a single night. Instead, you know, stocks just fell election night, the futures did anyway, and then had already recovered by morning, and then it's just been off to the races ever since. So it is interesting. It seems like years of, you know, potential benefits from deregulation, from changes of government policies and what have you, that's all been pulled forward to right now. Mm-hmm. But as you said, the bond market is telling a very different story. Bond yields are actually quite low, and the Fed is still looking to raise rates. So, you know, these shouldn't really all go together. I mean, stocks could definitely rise in the face of Fed rate tightening if it meant the economy was so strong that it justified a rate hike, then all that's fine. Oftentimes, bonds will fall if the Fed is raising rates. That's sort of the opposite of what most people would think. If they get the Fed's raising rates, then bond yields should rise also. But that's actually not true. If there's a perception that the Fed's going to be too aggressive, they're going to slow down the economy too much, then bond yields actually fall in anticipation of falling inflation and falling growth and what have you. So you basically have the bond market reacting to the Fed in a completely different way than the stock market is. One is right, one is wrong. Which one is right and which one is wrong? Well, we'll find out soon enough.
Yeah.
But they both can't be right at the same time.
Well, corporate earnings came in the first quarter. And I think pretty much everyone's reported to this point, and they've been pretty good. So that's a good thing. And obviously, you know, we still have the Brexit to deal with, and the French, you know, they vote I think on Sunday, and that'll kind of steer them in one way or one direction or another, but it's certainly not steering them totally to leaving the European Union. So I saw Scott Minard recently at a conference, you know, Scott from Guggenheim, and he was talking about how, you know, Europe still remains sort of that possible black swan that something could come out of nowhere. At this point, is that what we should be the most concerned about, is the things that we don't even know exist?
Yeah, and the problem is, if you don't know they exist, it's really hard to prepare for them.
Well, that's, yeah, for sure.
That's that unknown unknown, as Donald Rumsfeld said about 10 years ago. So, you know, what do you do with that? And, you know, the truth is, you never you're never really going to know, you know, what that big black swan, that big unexpected, you know, thing. You can prepare. You can basically just have insurance. You know, prepare for the unknown. And when in your portfolio, what does that mean? It means, you know, keeping a little bit of cash on hand, avoiding leverage, avoiding taking excessive risk. You know, always just kind of being a little bit cautious. But, you know, it's really hard to prepare for something if you don't even know what to prepare for. I think, you know, what's on people's agenda right now, you know, they see the tensions with North Korea. They mm-hmm. see tensions in the Middle East. They see all of that, and it makes them a little bit nervous. But if you look at the price of gold right now, it's telling you that we've probably seen the high water mark there. Gold really spiked. In part to a lot of this geopolitical tension. It has really been falling off for the last couple weeks, though. So, to the extent that gold is a decent fear gauge, it seems to be receding. And the VIX, that's become kind of a household term recently, and the VIX is a measurement of stock market volatility. It's actually at its lowest levels since 2007. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're talking pre-2008 meltdown. That's, you know, the VIX is at its lowest level since then. So
it's such a lagging indicator the VIX is. I mean, golly, you know, when the market's in turmoil, the VIX is high. When it's smooth and something's about to happen, it seems like it's always very low. So you never really know how that's
going to turn out. It doesn't really tell you much ahead of time.
No, it's always a lagging indicator for sure. Let's talk briefly about the tax plan, the Trump tax plan. Obviously, that could be very stimulative to the economy, knowing that the pass-through entities, just like myself, just like yourself, if we only had to pay 15 or 20% on our pass-through income, I mean, that would allow us to do a lot, hire people, invest in more things, and grow our businesses, rather than paying 39.6 plus our state tax and it just sitting in our operating account because we can't take it out and use it because we need to pay possible payroll if things slow down. I think that could be absolutely monstrous if that happens.
Yes, it will. And there's multiple aspects to this. There's the small business aspect. And remember, most jobs in this country are created by small business.
Yeah, 86% of companies under 500, I'm sorry, 86% of companies in America have under 500 employees. So, absolutely.
Yeah. So, most of the focus tends to go on large, the big S&P 500 type companies. But the truth is, it's the little mom-and-pop businesses mm-hmm. that might have 5 employees, 10, one employee. Those are the ones that are really the engine of job growth. So anything you can do to just keep, to lower their cost of doing business. And it's not just taxes. Trump is also looking to scale back a lot of the regulatory burden, which is also good in that count. We may not really see the results from that for a couple of years. But I'll say this, I am really, really excited about the proposed tax cuts. Mm-hmm. I'm always happy about paying less in personal income tax, and that's always nice. But cutting it at the business level is actually far more exciting for several reasons. One, at the big company level, think about all of the just hundreds and hundreds of billions that's just sitting offshore that Apple and Microsoft and Google, all these guys are reluctant to move it back to the U.S. because they don't want to pay exorbitant taxes on it.
Right.
If they're paying 10 or 15% in taxes, they'll bring that home all day long. And then what will they do with it? They'll use it to repay debt. They'll use it to buy back shares. They'll use it to expand their businesses. It'll just be a lot more money sloshing around here, which is definitely good. And as you pointed out, cutting taxes on the pass-through entities is also a very big deal for small business.
You know, Apple, folks, borrowed money to pay a dividend because it was cheaper for them to do that than it was to repatriate the money they had overseas to pay that dividend. I mean, it's absolutely insane.
Vastly cheaper.
Yeah.
Vastly cheaper.
You're crazy. I think they issued like 10-year debt like 2.5% or something like that. It was crazy. Charles Seisz.
Paying 2.5% as opposed to paying 30-something.
Yeah, no kidding. And we have a segment later in the show that you'll have to listen to, and it's about where to get the money. And my answer is the cheapest money, and we'll be talking about that later in the show for sure. We've got Charles Sizemore. He's on the line with us. He is the Chief Investment Officer of Sizemore Capital Management down in the great state of Texas. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to Charles about the old saying, sell them may go away, come back again, I don't know, some other day, and also that emotional investor cycle that we've been taught about and we talk about a lot. You know, as you have the hope and optimism, and then the thrill and excitement and euphoria, and then as things come down, you get anxious about it, you get some denial. I want to talk to Charles about the first, the calendar sell in May, and then second, the emotional cycle, where he thinks we are in that cycle. We'll be right back, everyone. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, in the investment world, we've always heard this old adage, sell in May, go away, come back again. I think it's after Labor Day, but I don't really know. Charles Sizemore is our guest. He's the Chief Investment Officer of Sizemore Capital Management down in Texas. He's a frequent guest on CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox, Business News, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, you name it. He's a contributor around the globe. He's actually in Peru right now calling, so the connection is fantastic. And Charles, I was reading By the Numbers with our friend Mick Higley that puts that out each and every week, and he talked about how in analyzing the S&P 500 since 1990, the six-month period ending on April 30th has beaten the six-month period ending on October 31st, 18 out of 27 years. So, yeah, a lot, but not that many. But the big point here is in that six-month period that ended April 30th, the market during that period of time is up 638% versus 73% over the six-month period ending October 31st, the May through October. So this whole thing that we've been, you know, told like a nursery rhyme in the investment world for years, sell and may go away, is there any credence to that at all?
Well, there definitely is some. And part of it just comes down to avoiding the months where bad things tend to happen. So crashes tend to be more common in September and October. You know, but the whole sell in May thing, you're avoiding September and October. You're also avoiding, you know, the summer months tend to be lower volume because, you know, hey, even soulless Wall Street bloodsuckers, even they take vacations from time to time.
Yeah, but, and, you know, I think that's a bunch of hogwash because just like you're in Peru, I called your office today and they said, can I ask who's calling? I said, David Hayes. They said, okay, hold on. And they connect me through from Texas to Peru in about 5 seconds. So this whole idea of the senior traders being on vacation, I think that's old stuff when it comes to sell and may go away.
I think you might be right, though. Volume does take a dip a little bit. I think people do, you know, they take off early. I mean, they're just not as engaged in the summer. And so that lack of volume has some factor, but you're right, not like it used to. But a lot of it, you know, like I said, it's sort of addition by subtraction. You know, you avoid the months where you're likely to have problems, and that kind of, you know, that definitely helps your averages. Mm-hmm. Though oddly enough, July of all random months tends to be fairly bad too. So I have no idea why that is. It might just be statistical randomness. Who really knows? But they're definitely, you know, the numbers really do speak for themselves. Now the question you have to ask yourself as an investor, of course, is it worth, you know, selling and potentially paying taxes and transaction costs and what have you, and all of that, and then just to get back in a few months later? The answer is, well, sometimes it could be. Other times it definitely wouldn't be. It's definitely, you know, the higher your tax bracket is, the more you'd be looking to pay in taxes. That's certainly, you know, the less attractive it would be to sell in May.
Yeah, and you know, most average people have most of their money in their retirement accounts at work, so to shove it all into the income fund or sit there in the cash account, I just don't think makes much sense. I don't know of many credible investment managers that have followed this you know, this way of investing, the calendar method. I think they look more at fundamentals, really what's happening right now, and all the things we just talked about need to happen to kind of underpin where we are in this market right now. Now, let's talk about the emotional cycle of an investor. You know, it's funny because I had a 90-year-old guy in my office this week wanting to know, you know, if this was a time for him to start putting money in the market. And this guy has never been in the market. He's been a CD guy back in the 80s, barely could get him to be a bond guy or a fixed annuity guy. You know, he's not a stock guy, but the euphoric nature of the market can grab a hold of anyone. So, you know, this has been well publicized. You can Google it and see it. But we talk about how when the market's going up, there's the hope, the optimism, and then you get into excitement and then a thrill, and then there's this euphoric state where everybody's throwing everything into it. You know, real estate is and stocks seem to be about the only thing that when the price is going up, people want to buy more of it. It's not like when the market goes down, they want to buy more. They're running out of the store. But where do you think, and then as the market goes down, people get anxiety, denial, fear, depression, panic, and then finally you have capitulation, which we saw that back in 2000, 2008 and in early 2009. I'm kind of feeling right now, this is totally speculative, Charles, but I'm kind of feeling optimism and excitement. I'm certainly not feeling that thrill and euphoric yet out of my clients that I see every day.
I would agree, and I've had similar experiences as you. I've had clients who have been extremely conservative for years, you know, really barely wanting to stick their big toe in the stock market, all of a sudden in the last 3 months just eager to get invested again. And that does make me a little bit worried. You know, when you have people that have been sitting on the sideline for years suddenly want to get in, it just kind of, it makes you ask, you know, who is left to put money in that hasn't already put money in at that point? But I think you're right. I think we're still at the earlier stages of this. I think we're at the, you know, optimism, perhaps even excessive optimism stage. Mm-hmm. But we're not quite that euphoric bubble. You're not seeing people quitting their jobs and, you know, dreaming of getting rich in the stock market. You're not really seeing that yet.
Of course, there's the old famous story of Joe Kennedy, who was in a cab or a shoeshine booth, and the shoeshine guy was giving him stock tips in 1929, and that immediately caused him to sell all of his stocks right before the big Great Depression
crashed.
Right
before the big one.
Yeah, so yep. We don't know if that story's true, but it's certainly a good one. Charles, let's see where we are in time. I think we're pretty good. I want to talk briefly before we head into the next segment, and then I'm going to let you go. You know, whenever the U.S. back many years ago began stimulating through low interest rates, through massive bond buying programs, you know, the market took off. And obviously, we all thought that it was artificial, and maybe it was. I don't really know, but now hopefully it's being underpinned somewhat. So when Europe began doing the same thing a couple of years ago, everybody said, well, that's an easy trade. Let's head over to Europe. And guess what? They were wrong. They were way too early. But now we're finally starting to see the economic outlook brighten maybe a little bit in Europe, and we've seen the market do pretty well. What's your view on that? Because we've been taking the view at our office to not necessarily go into Europe, but to buy companies that do business in Europe. U.S. companies, because, you know, we kind of bid on that a little bit and jumped in, not in a big way, but enough to where, you know, you were kind of looked foolish by buying even a little bit of European stuff, because the valuations here, the PEs here versus the PEs there, I mean,
yeah.
Goodness gracious, it just seemed like, you know, bargain time over there in Europe.
Well, two things really hurt that. I mean, I was on the same page as you. I mean, to me, Europe looked very attractive. What ended up hurting it was two things. One, the euro. So the euro has been weak for a while now. The dollar has been excessively strong.
Right.
So even if your European company was doing well, when you translate that from euros to dollars, it looks a lot less impressive. And then the other is just this kind of, for lack of a better word, political risk overhang, and just this, you know, this fear of it. For Europe, it's been one crisis after another since 2008. You know, we had our crisis in 2008. By early 2009, it was over. And then it was just a long recovery. Whereas with mm-hmm. Europe, they had the same crisis we did in 2008. They had a secondary crisis in 2010 with Greece and all of that. And then that just kind of never went away. They just kept having crisis after crisis until probably halfway through 2013. And so, you know, they're really only a couple of years into their recovery. So I do think it still makes sense to invest in Europe, and I think doing it indirectly is a fine way to do it, buying American multinationals that have a big presence there. I think that's fine. But I do think and Europe has been outperforming this year.
Right, right.
So I think perhaps, you know, Europe has finally had its moment. I mean, I was early to the trade. You were early to the trade. I think a lot of value investors were. But I think it's finally happening.
We're going to take another quick break. I'm going to keep Charles around for just one more quick segment when we come back. I'm going to tell you about a story today with a client, and I just want to kind of illustrate this with you when I come back on just the mentality of what that average investor is and looks like. And then I also want you, Charles, just to kind of talk in general about, hey, if you're just the average guy out there, average gal, mom and dad, raised your kids, now you're trying to save and prepare for retirement in a few years. You know, we sit here and talk about all of these things, you know, European trade, you know, buying insurance on your portfolio, taxes and all this kind of stuff. And the person, I think the average person is sitting there saying, that's all interesting, but just tell me what to do. When we come back, I'm going to have Charles just tell us what to do. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, if you're running around on Saturday morning and it's not pouring down rain, you'd like to get your car washed, head over to Bloomington, over to Kroger on the south side, where the Bloomington South wrestling team will be out there washing cars from 10 to 2. Of course, my son's a wrestler, so I have a reason to promote this. And they're trying to raise money to go to the Disney Duels, which is a team wrestling tournament down in, of course, Disney, the first week of June. So stop by there from 10 to 2, Kroger South. Get your car washed. They do a really good job because all the dads supervise. And so I may be there, too. I really don't know. The James Earl Jones of Investment Managers is with us on the phone, Charles Sizemore. And if you haven't gotten that joke by now, folks, you aren't going to get the joke, because you see that Charles has a big, deep, robust voice. And sometimes we make him even say, "This is CNN," before, or we ask him to do that. We can't make him do anything. He's out in Peru, for heaven's sake, to say that to us. And we may convince him to do it here. Hey, Charles, I had a conversation today, and this kind of illustrates the sometimes the mindset of just the average person out there, the way they think about things. And so my conversation was like this. Okay, you invested $50,000 a couple of years ago. You sold it for $60,000. So did you make money? And the person said, "Yeah, but it was $70,000, so I lost $10,000. And I go, "Well, no, that's not my question. If you invested $50,000 and you sold it for $60,000, did you make money?" And they reluctantly said, "Well, I guess." But the point here is, this was a true conversation I had with someone. We were walking through the history of a particular investment, and they said, "Yeah, but it was 70." I said, "I don't care what it was. You put 50 in, you got 60 out, you made 10 grand. Is that a good deal?" But it was 70. I mean, they couldn't get it over the. But that. Yeah. But the average person listening to our show, you know, like I said before, they're hearing us talk about this and that and that and this. But at the end of the day, I mean, they just want to know what to do. So I kind of lay that out to you. You know, here we are, you know, I'm a couple, let's say I'm 56, 57. My kids are now, you know, kind of on their own. We're saving like wild people. We're trying to pay down our debts, which, by the way, folks, is not very expansive to the economy. So you're not doing your part right there. 70% of GDP, guys, is based on you spending that money, not saving that money or paying down your debts, which is a problem. But for me personally, as a family, I'm thinking this is the right thing to do. And they just want to know what to do, Charles. So I kind of lay this in your lap. What should they be doing?
You know, there's actually a word for that. It's called the paradox of thrift. That's when what's good for one family is actually bad for the whole economy. You know, so saving is good for you, but it's bad for the group. But anyway, that's my random factoid for the day.
I love it.
But yeah, you know, what to do with your money right now? I would say the first thing you should always do is get the easy money. And for most people, that means maxing out the 401k, maxing out the IRA. If you have an HSA plan, max that out too. Get the tax break, because at the end of the day, if you're in a high tax bracket, you're going to, you know, quote, make more money in, you know, not exactly returns, but, you know, the tax break alone is going to be worth more than what you're likely to get through actual investment returns. So always take advantage of that first. And so, okay, you've gotten that taken care of. You know, what do you do now? I would definitely keep a little bit of cash on hand. Normally, I would say, you know, stay invested, have your allocation down, you know, what percentage in stocks, what percentage in bonds, what percentage in real estate, what have you, just have that down and stick with it. But right now, given that bonds are not yielding a lot, I would say it makes more sense to forego what small amount of return you'd probably get from the bonds. Keep a little more money in cash just to have as dry powder. I'm not necessarily expecting a blow up anytime soon, but it does make sense to have a little bit more cash on hand. But overall, you know, I would say, you know, have your plan and stick to it. And for most people, that should be a mixture of, I would say, dividend-paying stocks, some, you know, dividend-paying real estate. I'm from Texas, so clearly I'm biased here, but I do like oil and gas pipelines. They're a really nice source of good tax advantage return. You know, these days, I think all of those are very good places to be.
Charles Sizemore, he's been our guest. He is the Chief Investment Officer, and if you'd like to, of Sizemore Capital Management, if you'd like to check out Charles, you can go to sizemorecapital.com, sizemorecapital.com, or email me over at cfci.us. You've heard that maybe 100,000 times. We'll get you connected with Charles, and he writes a lot of great stuff, a lot of newsletters, a lot of blogs, and if you Google him, it comes up immediately. Of course, he's been a frequent guest on many of the major news networks, including CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox Business News, Wall Street Journal, and then some local, you know, podunk shows here in southern Indiana, like Yomo. But listen, Charles, we are on Of course, you can get us online at WGCLRadio.com, but we are on iTunes as well. We have Google Play Music, so you can have podcasts. So I'm trying to grow up and be like you, Charles, someday, and actually, you know, fly to Peru with my family to talk with some clients and, you know.
Well, David, the first step to getting there is to use the force.
There you
all
go.
Right, that good?
Thank you very much.
That's
okay,
that.
I'm happy. I'm happy. Hey, man, I appreciate you taking the time. Get back to your family. Have a good dinner, and I'm sure we'll be catching up soon.
All righty. Thank you.
Thanks, man. We're going to take a break, guys, when we come back. Simple rules for calculating where you stand on college savings. And then later on, where do you get the money if you need it? My answer is, what's the cheapest money? We have all that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, Class 101 in Bloomington does provide expert guidance in college search, admissions, test prep. The financial aid process, do not do this alone. Call Class 101 at 812-320-3702 or go online at myclass101.com. /Bloomington. My son's in that program, and he will be there Monday, Kim. So kick him in the rear end. Get him going. He needs a little help. The brother needs some help here in the last month or so of school. Hey, you know, a lot of people, you know, all of a sudden you wake up one day and your son's starting Little League football or soccer or whatever, and they're 8, 9. You're like, holy crap, I haven't saved anything for college yet. I found a neat article in the New York Times about where you should stand on college savings, given the certain ages of your child. To help families get a rough idea whether they're on track to meet their college savings goals, Fidelity is promoting a rule of thumb. Multiply your child's age by 2,000 to get a back-of-the-napkin estimate of how much you should have saved to this point. So the number is based on a goal of saving one-half of the cost of a four-year public in-state university, where the average cost in 2016 was a little more than $20,000 annually. No one, they say, pays 100% of the college right out of the savings. They pay for it with current income, grants, scholarships, loans, additional savings, whatever. And it's a catchy phrase. It's the so-called 2K rule. Remember Y2K? Woo! Remember that? We were all scared everything was going to flip back to the 1900s. Well, that didn't happen. But this is a real calculation. So here's the math. If you have a 10-year-old, you should have $20,000 saved. That's how far you're behind. If you have a 2-year-old, you should have basically $4,000 saved. So it's a good back-of-the-napkin rule of thumb estimation of about where you should be. If you want to pay for all of it, then you double that up. Now, where are some other areas you can get money if you need it for college costs? You can take money from IRAs to pay for college. If it's a Roth IRA, it's going to be tax-free. If it's a traditional IRA, you're going to pay the taxes, but no penalty. Maybe you have cash value life insurance. That's a fantastic place to go get money. You can borrow from that, just like you borrow from the bank, but you borrow from yourself, pay it back or not pay it back, whatever you want to do. Of course, financial aid is one, but you know, if the kid has a bunch of money in their name, and Kim and Randy over at Class 101 can explain this better than me, and I'm sure we'll have them on the show soon, but if money's in the child's name and you go to apply for financial aid, then a good chunk of that money, we're talking like 20-30% of it, is going to be assessed towards the expected contribution towards college. If that money's in the parent's name, it may only be assessed at maybe 4-6%. So it's not a good idea to have money in the kid's name if you're going to apply for financial aid versus, you know, other ways. The other thing is, you know, what about things like 401k loans and things like that? That's not a bad idea. I always say to people, you know, when they say, hey, I need to get some money out of my retirement account. Okay, that's fine. We can do that. What do you need it for? And they'll say this or that or the other. And I'm like, you know, let's think about this maybe a little more logically. Where's the cheapest money? You know, we mentioned earlier that Apple borrowed money to pay a dividend. They borrowed money to pay a dividend so they did not have to bring the money back from overseas, pay the taxes on that money. Sometimes it's better to borrow it than pay the taxes. Remember, when you take money out of that retirement account, that IRA account, it's going to be taxed at your ordinary tax rate. So maybe that's 25, maybe it's 30, maybe it's 39.6. You throw on the state tax, you have over 40%. Would it be cheaper to borrow it at 2? Maybe. And then what about a 401k loan? I know people are against these, and I am for the most part, if it's for that, you know, next emergency that came up where your kid needed that or someone is begging you for this. But at the end of the day, you know, if you borrow money out of the 401k, you're essentially borrowing it from yourself. Maybe you go buy a car with it. That's fine. That's fine. You can pay that money back over a five-year period. You can borrow up to 50 grand out of the account as long as you have at least 100 in there. And that's not a bad way to do it, but you want to be smart about it. I mean, one of the things that I think is a detriment to people and employees is 401k loans. We've seen that a lot. People retiring with loans. And when you talk about what did you do with that money, most of the time they have no idea. Now, if you're doing it for an education, you're doing it to purchase a car rather than borrow it from the bank, you're doing it to, make a return on the investment. Because remember, when you take the loan out, you're now that investment. You're the one paying that interest rate back. But if you're taking it out to bail someone out of a tough situation, or you're taking it out to pay off those credit cards that had the steak dinner on it that you ate 6 years ago, you know, that's not a good idea. So you have to be smart about it. And if you're considering taking money out to do something with it and you want to talk about it, I love talking to people. So give me a call. Actually, email me. It's better. CFCI.us. I bet I talk to 6 or 8 people a week that, you know, just have questions. You know, and I love talking to people. I'll call you on the way home. And they're always like, I can't believe you called me. Yeah, I'll call you. It's no big deal. What else do I have to do? I'm driving. Like, well, I can listen to the radio, or I can call you and talk to you. I kind of like the idea of talking to you. So those are just some basic concepts that I think people need to get their hands around. Of course, if you're in Indiana and you're going back to the college savings thing, and maybe you're a little bit behind, you can put more money in those than the $5,000 that we always talk about. The $5,000 isn't a maximum; it's the maximum that you're going to get a tax credit on. So you put $5,000 in it. The Indiana state return will give you $1,000, 20% cash back on your return to offset other taxes. You know, if you're married, you only get to do the $5,000. It's on a tax return. Now, your son or daughter may have an account already open for them. You can contribute to that account and get the tax deduction. You don't have to open up your own account. So we're always encouraging people to do that. We're encouraging people to open up accounts for unborn children. I've had grandparents open up accounts like that. So you open up an account, let's say that I was a pending grandparent. I hope to be someday, hopefully not too soon, but someday. And I say, you know what, I'm going to start saving for my grandchild today. Well, I'm the owner of the 529. I make myself the beneficiary of the 529. I put my $5,000 in. I get my $1,000 taxed back on the state return. And I do it again and again and again. Many years down the road, all of a sudden, my son has a daughter or a son, a grandchild of mine. Guess what? I'm still the owner. I just changed the beneficiary to the new grandchild, and I've gotten ahead of this thing. Where else can you make 20% on your money? I can't. I mean, guaranteed you're making 20% from the state of Indiana. I think it's a pretty darn good deal. And a lot of people don't think about that. They just kind of think they got to do it once the kid's born. No, heck no. You can do it well before the kid's born. We have a lot of people, encourage people to do that for sure. All right, a couple quick announcements. Bloomington South Wrestlers, they're over at Kroger South on Saturday morning from 10 to 2, washing cars. So please pray for no rain. They need the cash to make a trip down to the Disney Duels in early June. So please go out and support those young guys. And they do a good job. They're not going to have, you know, sponges that fell on the ground and have a bunch of rocks in it and then rub it on your car. We have some high-quality kids, and we also have some high-quality parents that are going to be watching that to make sure. Also, the third Tuesday of each and every month, they're at the Legacy Learning Center on South College, which is in our office building. Wayne Thacker and Josh Norris, who will be with me next week to talk about Medicare, Medicare Advantage, and Medicare supplements on next week's show. Looking forward to that. They do a Social Security and Medicare workshop every third Tuesday of each and every month. And I just haven't announced that. But last week they had 26 people show up just through an invitation through email. And I'm just encouraging that if you want to learn, Wayne was telling me that he's had people come to 3 in a row. So to me, that tells me that number one, it's informative, but there's also a lot of information to learn, and maybe they had to come back 2 or 3 times just to get it all. But it's the third Tuesday of every month, the Social Security and Medicare workshop over at our learning center, The Legacy on South College. You can email us at cfci.us. Just let us know you're coming so we can set up for you for sure. All right, let me take a break. When I'll come back, I'll wrap up and preview next week's show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, guys, whenever people advertise or they say, hey, will you have David do these reads? It's usually people that I know and the people that I like and people that I trust and people that I'm confident in. And that's why people like Indiana Dave is a good example of that. And Indiana Dave, he's going to help you buy, help you sell your real estate. Indiana Dave Real Estate, easy to Google, easy to Yelp. Get a hold of him. He's a really nice guy. And in fact, if you listen to his commercials, how can you not see that he's a really nice guy? It's just kind of a folksy sound, but he'll work for you. And then don't forget, you know, I mentioned Class 101. You know, do it. If you have a kid that's in 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, we got Will in this, I think, in 7th or 8th grade. It's fantastic. So go to myclass101.com/Bloomington. And right now, these guys are busy. Busy. But I'm going to read it anyway. Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. They can always use more business, right? Reclaim those clutter areas of your home with help from Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage on 17th Street. It has a big tiger on it. It has orange roofs. And, it's a great place. Newly remodeled, 24-hour on-site management. They offer pickup online at bloomingtonaffordablestorage.com. Stop in and see Karen. She's fantastic. She'll help you out. She'll make sure that the process is easy. It's great. But the reason I said they're pretty busy, because guess what? When students leave, they have to store their stuff somewhere. And Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage, I hope for them, are busting at the seams with stuff. So I'm going to actually stop in there Friday. I have some stuff I need to pick up. So we'll report back next week on a live report from Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. So we appreciate all these guys very much. And, check them out, help them, support them, and all that good stuff. I know I don't have much time, but I wanted to tell you this real quick before I forgot. I had a client, long-term client. He turned 75 this year, been a client for 15 years. Has a life insurance policy that has about $40,000 or $50,000 of cash in it. He came in today and was talking about not wanting his money to be used up for nursing homes, and that how do you protect some of this stuff. And what's crazy is this life insurance also doubles as a long-term care benefit. So what I told him is, you know, we need to switch the ownership now to your kids. So they're the owners, you're the insured, they're the beneficiaries. Because as stupid as this sounds, they will actually, meaning Medicaid, will actually make you cash in that life insurance policy that even has a long-term care benefit on it before, and spend that down before you get on Medicaid. How silly is that? So we did that, change the ownership, and I think everything's going to be good. Hey, next week, Josh Norris, Medicare supplement specialist, will be in-house. So everything you need to know about Medicare and supplements, we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.